One of the things that I often hear and that sometimes frustrates the members of the congregation is just what a disparate group of people we are. We come from different backgrounds, we live in different suburbs. We hold different values and different priorities very dear. There are times when we find it hard to understand each other or to communicate with each other, and there are times when we don't even want to try. And I look around and I see this too. We come from Werribee, not here tonight, and Warrandyte, not here tonight. We come from the inner city and we come from outer suburbia. We come burning for social justice or yearning for a safe holding place or seeking just a little kindness. We come with mental health issues or painful life stories or powerful personalities that can be difficult to manage, and I certainly count myself in that last group. We come with kids, lots of kids, who are sometimes quiet and sometimes rocketing around the room. We come with partners. We come with loneliness. We come with joy. We are indeed a very odd bunch. We are, in fact, a rabble. If it's any consolation, this isn't just a story of our church and our congregation. Friends and colleagues of mine at other churches have often said, "Oh, our church is so difficult. If only we had just a few more members who were just a little bit more normal, maybe just a little bit more like us." And it seems to me that many churches feel like they're a ragtag mob. Wouldn't it be lovely if we were all mature and demure and quiet, polite, softly spoken, balanced and kind? Wouldn't it be comfortable if we never experienced friction or frustration or conflict? Wouldn't it be nifty if none of us had mental health problems or other issues? Wouldn't it be great if our services were perfectly sedate and never messy or noisy or rumbled by people weeping in the back row? Yes, it would be fine and dandy. It's simply swishing, in fact. But it wouldn't be church. Because the people of God have always been a ragtag mob. They've never fit together very well. Even in the earliest church, there were arguments and struggles over who belonged and who didn't. There were arguments about women and men, Jews and Gentiles, slaves and free. On the one hand, women were hosts and sponsors and active leaders of the earliest churches. On the other, women were told to submit to male authority. On the one hand, Gentiles were welcomed into the early church just as they were. On the other, Gentiles were told that they must be circumcised first, and so on. And so even at the end of the first century, there were lots of tensions. Men and women, slave and free, Jew and Gentile, who belonged. The early Christian churches were formed from groups of people from radically different backgrounds, who held radically different ideas and expectations about how we should live. And don't kid yourself that it was comfortable even back then. Because we now live in a society with weakened taboos, it can be really difficult to understand just how remarkably the early church crossed social divides. To give one example, many early Christians identified as devout Jews. And for a devout Jewish man to eat alongside a Gentile, let alone a menstruating Gentile woman, was absolutely unheard of. He would be and he would feel defiled, and he'd be excluded from the temple and the rest of his Jewish community until he'd undergone ritual purification. But that's exactly what participation in the early church would demand, sharing a meal across social divides, with consequences that it's very difficult for us even to imagine. So tonight we heard a little bit of Peter's letters to the scattered churches. In the letter, he was trying to address what it means to be church and how to be Christian in diverse places and in diverse cultures. And even in this single letter, we see some of the tensions found in the first century church. For example, Peter tells the recipients that they're God's own people. But further on, in a bit we don't read, he also says that they must obey the emperor and that wives must obey their husbands. And yet the emperor regularly demanded that his subjects fall flat on their faces and worship his statue as it was carried through the streets. Could a Christian who must not worship graven images or idols truly obey the emperor when required to worship his statue? Well, probably not. And what of pagan husbands? Well, pagan husbands could and would require their wives make the necessary sacrifices to the ancestors and to the household gods, which oversaw the grain and the store cupboards and all these other important things. But God's people are to worship no other gods. So could a Christian woman be fully obedient both to God and to her pagan husband? Well, again, probably not. In fact, you can't obey God and obey the emperor. And you can't obey God and obey your pagan husband. And it's not to have a go at Peter or the emperor or pagan husbands, but to show just how conflicted even the early church was about what it means to be God's people. This group of slaves and Gentiles and Jews and women and men and free had trouble working out exactly how to do church and be church even back then. 2,000 years have passed and churches are still asking questions. These days we're not arguing about how to include Gentiles and whether they must first be circumcised so all you men can uncross your legs. But there are plenty of robust conversations across the Christian church about the leadership of women, about the leadership or even the inclusion of practicing homosexuals, about the rights of those who are baptised as infants versus those who are baptised as adults, about what it means to welcome children, and so on. Who belongs? Who can lead? Who has a say or a voice or a vote? What makes a church a church? And where are all the normal people? I find it very comforting to realise that questions like these have been asked for a long, long time. For as long as the church has been around, in fact. And so if we want some insight into what makes church, we might look back to those early days. And we'll find that despite the conflict and the confusion, the early church did have some pretty good answers. When we go back to Peter's letter, in the part we did hear tonight, we see that he wrote, "Once you were not a people." What does this mean? Well, the Greek word laos means people or populace, and more precisely, it was often used to mean a group of people with common cultural bonds and ties. So when we're not a people, we're just a bunch of humans with nothing to hold us together. Strangers in a crowd, faces on a train, or in the version we heard tonight, a rabble. And in many ways, at this and every church, we're still a rabble. Every week, we join together with people from all different places who have different histories and different values and different expectations and different ways of communicating. We come from all over, and we're thrown together only because of our faith and the worship service. Of course, we often feel like a rabble. And yet we have this one big thing in common, our faith in Jesus Christ. We're all here tonight because we've placed our trust in him, and many of us have been baptised in his name. And through this faith and this baptism, we've transcended our backgrounds and our culture. We've joined something new, which is God's culture. And when we're part of God's culture, we're no longer just a rabble or just faces in the crowd. Instead, what Peter reminds us is that by joining together, we become God's own people, a holy nation and a royal priesthood. Of course, it doesn't always feel like this. It's because we're human and we're flawed, and we're still in a never-ending process of embracing and embodying God's culture. But paradoxically, just by fronting up and joining together, we're already God's people, already proclaiming his wonderful light. It's understandable that there are times when many of us want to belong to a group which is easier and which confirms all of our values and our habits and our social norms. And it's tempting to want this from the church. But a homogenous group, a group of people who are all the same, are not church. They're a country club. And the group we have here is much more interesting because it's part of a culture which has always required its members to transcend the human barriers. It's a group which invites us to see past male and female, child and adult, gay and straight. It's a group which asks us to take seriously readers of The Guardian Weekly and The Age and The Herald Sun. It's a group which communicates across social class and cultural divides, and there are plenty of those in Australia. It's a group which requires us to break bread and drink wine and live in love and peace with whoever turns up to the table, no matter who they are, and no matter where they come from. We may not always understand each other. We may not always communicate with each other. We may not always even like each other. But in responding to God's generous mercy and in joining together around this table, we are committed to living in love from this day forth. When we come together each week, when we share bread and wine around the table and cheese and nibbles after the service, when we share our stories, when we listen to each other and encourage one another. We're already doing something strange, countercultural, priestly and wonderful. We're already communicating across boundaries and loving across human divides. But it doesn't stop here. We do this work here because it's our calling, and church is a great place to practice. But then we take it home. This week saw the delivery of a new federal budget, which will make life significantly harder for the poor and for the chronically ill, for single parents and for other vulnerable people. This week saw Sam Newman yet again use a footy show as a platform for homophobia. This week saw further discussions over the proposed watering down of the Racial Discrimination Act, changes which have been slammed by the very people the Act is supposed to protect. Rich and poor, well and unwell, gay and straight, Anglo and other, failure to love across boundaries is all the rage. But our calling is to live differently, both here at church and in every part of our lives. We are a ragtag bunch, but in witnessing to God's mercy and love, we become the people of God together. And the more we practice, both here and at home, and the more we love and listen and learn from each other, and from all others across every boundary that the world will throw up between us, then the further we'll grow into this identity as God's people. And who knows where this will lead.